Once there was a spot for one brief shining moment.
Again, a fantastic, fantastic big band, Broadway and beyond program. Thank you so much, Joe, for that. Thank you for being just a fantastic DJ. Happy New Year to you, by the way. He's still sitting here, so I can say that to him in person. This is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. And we're here with you for the next hour for our end of the year, last segment of the new WHFR Journal coming up right now.
If you want to change the world, you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Open enrollment for the 2011 winter semester has begun here at HFCC. New and returning students can sign up online for classes now at hfcc.edu. On-campus enrollment begins November 24th. That's open enrollment for Henry Ford Community College's 2011 winter semester online now at hfcc.edu. or on campus beginning Wednesday, November 24th.
This is the new WHFR Journal for December 31st, 2010. Another year going bye-bye. And we just want to wish you and yours, everybody out there, a great new year. Let's get it right this time, huh? Okay. Let's do things differently and better. Why not? Change your pattern, change your habits, and we'll be here with you into the new year, the new WHFR Journal. Happy to be with you. Today we have a special guest on the show just coming in and sitting in place. Sandy Bolton of the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter is coming on mic right now, getting her headphones in place. Sandy, welcome to the new WHFR Journal.
Well, thank you, Jay. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. And you brought a friend with you?
I did, just in case we got unruly. Amy was here to help lay down the gauntlet.
Well, welcome, Amy. There's also Amy Powers, our WHFR News Director in the studio here, and she is just getting plugged in. Okay.
Yes, I'm here. Happy to be here.
Okay. I'm not sure which microphone people are on, but I can hear their voices, so that's good enough. We have several end-of-the-year topics today, but we invited Sandy to come by. Sandy, your official title there?
I am Public Relations Director, Jay, for the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, which is, as you can well imagine, a tremendous privilege to be able to speak on behalf of an amazing organization and some animals every single day in need, and I get to be their voice. It's really quite an honor.
We have mentioned this before, but other people who listen to the show or are just tuning in for the very first time may not realize the fact that has been going on for 17 years now is that the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, they're not the city of Dearborn. You are an outside nonprofit group that runs the shelter under contract with the city of Dearborn, and maybe just end of the year nostalgia, whatever. Can you explain how this all came about 17 years ago?
boy, it is a really forward-thinking way for a city to have an animal shelter operated in a more humane, civilized, and caring way than just having a dog pound, essentially, which is really what people would have recognized in most cities, two decades ago, and even in some cities that can't afford to operate an animal shelter, which is a distinct difference, that you're actually sheltering the animals, trying to find homes for them, helping them medically if they need that attention, giving them opportunity to get socialized. And a dog pound literally is 5 days and down. If somebody doesn't claim that animal, somebody doesn't walk in to adopt it, that animal will be euthanized. And the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and their goal truly is to find a home for every adoptable animal that comes through their doors every year. So it doesn't happen that way. These animals have an opportunity for a second chance at life.
In general, then, to be able to provide superior humane animal care for the city of Dearborn at really no additional cost to the taxpayers. I mean, there's a contractual amount. I don't know if that's gone up in the last 17 years, but basically the city was not able to do the best possible job, and I can say that because 17 years ago, when the Friends started taking over, they were able, for the same cost, to start doing a better job.
Indeed.
And so that's what we want to continue. And, of course, the model, I'd like to point out, is maybe not applicable to every situation in city government, but it's by depending on a large group of talented and very dedicated volunteers and having to do your own fundraising for the additional money needed, having to do that almost constantly. And I think well of that model because it's the model for the WHFR came up with. I mean, we're here with only a couple of paid people. The college gives us a small amount of money, sort of a secure, stable money, like the amount of the city of Dearborn is giving you folks each year as a contract. But you can't survive on that alone. It's impossible to do the kind of great, exceptional job you have done on that alone. So you have to ask for extra money. And right up front here, you know, they're another nonprofit. I can tell you that December 31st is today. Just remind you, it's the last day to make contributions to all the very worthy nonprofit organizations. And if you're concerned about it, because you can contribute tomorrow, I understand, even Monday. Somebody said, and you have to check with your tax advisor on this, you could even contribute on Monday the 3rd, and it would still count, but maybe at least tomorrow the 1st, because it's a weekend or something, it would still count if you're concerned about getting a tax credit as a contribution to a nonprofit organization. But anytime you can give help to the Dearborn Animal Shelter, I should mention, it's good. My daughter and my granddaughter made a trip over to the facility on Greenfield Road, just south of I-94 here in Dearborn, and donated some cat trees we weren't using. One of my cats passed away in spring, and that was the cat tree, scratching post. That was the scratching post user cat. The other one uses one of our couches, I'm sorry to say. And we can't get him into scratching post. We tried for years. We tried every kind of scratching post. We tried spraying him with catnip odor. We tried it. He wouldn't use them. And so we had these extra ones, and we donated to them. And I guess you don't have enough cat trees as well as food and all the other things for all the animals over there. So you generously accepted those. We weren't looking for a tax credit. But I'm just saying, any kind of volunteer help. Even my granddaughter, who's only 3, said, when I get old enough, Mommy, can I go and help them? Can I volunteer to help them? Oh, absolutely. We don't know what the minimum age might be for, or what you might have available for a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old. But the more help the city of Dearborn, the people of Dearborn can give, the better. And it's an exceptionally well-run organization. Yes, I'm a supporter. I give money regularly, and I talk about the organization a lot. But maybe, Sandy, we asked you here today to tell us the update at the end of the year. What is the situation? What are what's the critical needs? There's always critical needs for the animal shelter, but what could people do other than giving money or Spare cat trees,
which, thank you, by the way, Jay, those are traditionally used in our cat community centers. Somebody that might donate a chair or a small love seat or cat trees. And these cat community centers, where the cat trees no doubt are now being utilized by some animals waiting for a home, they are a place where cats actually live cageless in these trailers that we have that are set up. And cats are very gregarious little creatures. And most people, when they see them in a kennel, for example, in the shelter itself or in a cage, an animal doesn't really excel living under those circumstances. And cats in particular are not going to necessarily be very evident what their little personalities are. So when cats are in these cat community centers where they roam cageless in sort of pseudo-home environments, you can really see, hey, that one's going to be a couch potato, and this one's really playful, and that one's using a scratching post. That's a good kitty. And those are the cats actually with the best successful adoption rate that we adopt out of the cat community centers, because people can really see the cat's true personality, and the cat can walk up and choose you, which is really the best scenario, that match is one that the animal recognizes, hey, you're my human. We go together.
Well, so it's just like people in prisons are not going to act the way they normally would. We hope they would act better than the reason that they were sent to that. But cats in cages, dogs in cages, stressed out, anxious, and the larger areas. You mentioned the community centers. These are actually aren't they outside of the main building.
Yeah.
There are some donated trailers that have been adapted to this purpose.
And there are only four of them right now. We're able to house up to 60 cats in those four trailers. And we, of course, have nearly 200 cats, so they're not all by any means in those trailers. One day in a new shelter facility, please, fingers crossed, paws crossed down the road, that would happen. We'd be able to house all of the cats in that kind of environment because they remain healthier. And, of course, their adoption rate is more successful out of the cat community center. So, though per square foot you've got fewer animals in there, the turnover is more successful and you don't incur as much medical costs. So it does really excel the success rate for them to be in those kind of environments. So it is really a terrific opportunity. And the Dearborn Animal Shelter is one of the very few shelter organizations that have cat community centers. It's a very forward-thinking way to care for animals.
Did the shelter get a large number of people or the usual number of people adopting pets before Christmas?
Well, it's what a wonderful question. It is really one of the most busy times of year that people choose to bring in a new pet family member right around the holiday time in November and December. And it has been extremely busy, which we are, of course, grateful for. Every day somebody comes through the door to adopt an animal. It's really important that when families are giving consideration to bringing in new pet family member, that everybody's there to discuss that and what would this be like and who's going to be, you know, walking Fluffy and who's going to be picking up after Fluffy and who's going to make sure that they're cared for, and discussing the costs of having an animal in your home and making sure that they're choosing the right pet for their household. If you kind of want a lazy friend to watch football with you during football season, that's a different kind of an animal than one that maybe is a little active and wants to play and be walked once or twice a day. Or those are the things that people need to consider. What is our home really like? And we want an animal that really, we don't have any children, so it's fine if we have an animal that doesn't want to be in a home with children, or we've got three kids, so we want to make sure that we've got an animal that adapts well. So the shelter really takes special care to make sure that an animal adopted out is going to a home that's a really good match, that this is going to be great for both of you and you're both going to succeed as family members. And the fourth quarter is our busiest time for placing animals, and it has been a very busy season, most notably by the introduction of so many puppies and kittens that the shelter continues to receive. And
how does that happen? You said the introduction. Does it mean people just come and drop them off,
or truly, or
Dearborn Animal Control people? There was at least one or two people that the city actually employs, isn't it? That
Only
go out
eight.
and
animal control
take
officers.
Animals off the street, or They have to pick them up from some home or something?
They're actually a department within the police department, and it is the Animal Control Division, and they are absolutely fantastic. And the city of Dearborn, we're very fortunate to have people who are so adept at recognizing where they might find a stray animal, where there are traditionally places where that's occurring, recognizing potential for cruelty, seeing things where there's neglect. They're really very, very well adept at their job. In fact, they've assisted other neighboring communities in circumstances of hoarding cases because they're relatively experienced here in Dearborn in hoarding cases, as we know.
Yeah, in the last year there was that major problem. It was cats, right?
Cats and, well, of course, our year and a half ago, our Chihuahua friends that came into the shelter.
That was the one I was remembering that got some publicity.
Yeah, well, they're the size of cats, so it made perfect sense, Jay.
Right, small, but...
Yeah, exactly, and there are three cat hoarding cases around that same scenario. So the animal control officers in Dearborn are really outstanding at bringing in animals and helping keep them off the streets so they're not in danger, that they're not a nuisance to the neighbors, and truly a humane place for them to come to is the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
As long as we're talking about the Dearborn Animal Control Officers, do you also have a relationship to the Humane Society operation or whatever group that was on the Animal Planet Channel 2 for a while that they did some reality show videos? I don't think they're currently taping in Detroit.
I think that was MHS. I do think you're right. That
Michigan Humane Society.
Yeah, and Humane Societies are, all of them are different. There are rescue organizations. There are Humane Society organizations. They all do have some standards that are the ones that we affiliate ourselves with and work with, have certain standards of care and what the expectations are. Not everyone does do that. Other rescues are not necessarily abiding by, same sort of sheltering policies and that sort of thing. And one of the benchmarks for those is the Humane Society of the United States typically offers what they describe or define as good practices for an animal sheltering organization. Mm. There are costs attached to that. They ask for you to be able to isolate animals that are not well and what sort of medical care they expect you to give, the way that if an animal needs to be euthanized, what sort of way you practice doing that. So there are a lot of standards in place. And the Dearborn Animal Shelter not only meets most of those, it meets all of those standards, but they excel beyond some of those that are defined by the Humane Society of the United States. And that's usually kind of the reference point that we use. But sheltering organizations communicate with one another. There are reasons why we'll get a particular animal in that really needs to go to sanctuary, that isn't really best in our hands, some sort of a wild bobcat or something. And there are things where, circumstances where there's a particular breed of dog that rescues, like if it's a basset that comes in, it might best be to pass that dog to a basset rescue. There are circumstances where someone's got an animal that they know we might be able to place smarter than they can. So we do share information, and we do sometimes share supplies, that sort of thing.
So it would still be a good time for the next month, especially because of this extra incoming of animals to consider adopting a pet, maybe some relatives gave kids in the family money or something instead of something else, and if they're at the right age and the right situation to adopt and care for a pet, then it's something to consider, especially now, after the fact of the Christmas holiday as such. But in fact, in the new year, adopt an animal, especially if you don't have one now, but you have the situation that you're able to handle that. In terms of, and I love the fact that you folks, of course, give that adoption counseling to the families that are considering this to find the right match financially, as well as socially and humanely, and even a little bit about the psychology of the animals you've taken notes on, because they're usually there for a period of time. You can observe their behavior, especially in the community centers, rather than just inside of a cage where you can't really tell much about the personalities.
Right. We temperament test the animals, and that's the first telltale sign of what sort of demeanor will kind of introduce dogs to cats, cats to dogs, to see if they will do well with other animals. And it's really important because an animal that gets inappropriately placed in a home ends up being an adoption failure. And that's a huge disappointment to the humans. They want this animal to succeed in their home, or they wouldn't have chosen to open up their home to have them there. And it's also a frustration for the animal because they've been taken out of the shelter environment that was, you know, it's a small space, but it's theirs and they're used to it. Now they're trying to adapt to a new circumstance in a home. And then if they fail there, they get bounced back into the shelter. So it's displacing them again. We have to spend time getting them calmed down and get them adjusted again to the shelter before we can turn around and get them placed again. So it's actually, there's financial costs incurred from both ends if an animal fails, and certainly emotionally for all the parties involved.
The Dearborn Animal Shelter, we're talking on this topic today on the new WHFR Journal at the end of the year with Sandy Bolton, who's the public relations contact for the shelter and is very involved in a lot of the activities, fundraising activities. Just a review to people if they're interested. I know I gave their location sort of vaguely on Greenfield Road, south of the I-94 overpass. So if you're driving south from Michigan Avenue, just keep on going past Rotunda, under the 94 overpass, and on the right side of the road, there's a drive that'll take you up above on a little hill, and the Dearborn Public Works is to the right,
yes,
sort of off
yep.
that drive, and the Dearborn Animal Shelter is to the left. Their website is dearbornanimals.org. That's dearbornanimals.org. Phone number 313-943-2697, 943-2697. We'll give that again at the end of the interview, too. We were interested here on the Journal covering just really two more topics that I had, Sandy, for you today, but that you have a relationship now with one of the charter schools, the K-12 charter schools in Dearborn, the Advanced Technology Academy, or ATA. It's sort of like a co-op experience and learning about animal care and animal care occupations. I assume for some of the people in the somewhat older part of the program, I'm not sure exactly what ages that they would start getting involved if they had an interest in this. But apparently the Advanced Technology Academy in Dearborn is developing several programs with businesses in the area that, you might say, pre-career exploration for the students there. And, of course, that additional help, volunteer help, but under the control of the academy, too, and the guidance guidelines set up, you can really get more done and more accomplished, too, with the people coming in who are actually exploring and you know, academically interested in maybe seeing what this career is all about.
In animal welfare, absolutely.
Now, how is this beginning in the fall, or already? Are they getting up to speed a little bit?
The agreement is actually, it is effective immediately. And what it will end up doing is allowing opportunity for the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter and the great folks at the Advanced Technology Academy to find ways where the two organizations can provide opportunities for people interested in animal welfare, for students, and then, of course, to help advance the animals that are in the care of the shelter organization. Mm-hmm. So they may do some pre-veterinary courses. There could be opportunity for people to be learning about socializing animals, about pet training. So there will be entrepreneurial opportunities that will spawn from this as well. It really intends to be a long-lasting relationship, and each of the steps involved are not yet clearly defined because it's a brand new kind of groundbreaking concept for our two nonprofit organizations to say, hey, there's opportunity where we could maybe pool some effort and use each of our resources to build this Michigan Animal Welfare Program and allow it to define as need is evident. We believe that together, obviously the human-animal intersection is really what the Dearborn Animal Shelter is all about. Like we have this relationship with our companion animals, and what we do to enrich and enhance each other's lives is what the shelter really does every day, trying to get animals off the streets that are homeless and get them to a place where they can be involved as a companion pet for someone, for a lifetime partner now. And Advanced Technology Academy is helping people learn skill sets and learn how from a from a standpoint of academics, how to become good citizens in a community and, of course, earn and have a successful career. And these two paths can sometimes meet. And that's what the spirit of this agreement is for. Mm-hmm. And
so it's to foster their academic work, too.
Absolutely.
In science and math and,
yes.
I guess in this case, zoology.
Yeah. There could be lots of opportunity, and it is not yet all, you know, defined in ink about what that could be, because we want to explore what the potential is. And the exciting part of that is we're really the first animal welfare organization to be involved in that kind of an agreement with an educational facility. And in fact, other organizations that are nationwide are very curious where we will go with this and where things will develop. So it's kind of an exciting new forward-thinking agreement between two organizations that are based in Dearborn and are here benefiting the entire community.
Do you know what I'm seeing? I pop up a lot, like in Oakland County area, a lot of the doggy daycare, a lot of the, you know, new businesses, entrepreneurial businesses that are, you know, they'll go to your home and walk the dog if you're working all day or something like that. Is that some type of program that somebody had the interest in, you know, doing that after college or even, you know, as a vocation that sort of training or, you know,
well.
Business training would be available?
It could very well lead to that sort of thing. It isn't, again, yet a definite program or mm-hmm. defined, but those are opportunities that are there for entrepreneurs that might want to be involved in animal care in any capacity like you're describing. Mm-hmm. And there certainly are people who do provide pet care here now in Dearborn.
Right.
And for others that maybe want to learn to hone that skill as they grow forward in their lives and their careers, those opportunities may indeed be present.
I was going to just draw a parallel between the Dearborn Public Schools. I think they have established a graduation requirement to volunteer in local business, nonprofits, or for-profits before they graduate. So many hours. I forget
yes.
the number of hours. But that's not as – I mean, they have to write a report, I think, afterwards
sure.
or keep a log of what they're doing. But what the ATA, the Advanced Technology Academy, is doing, to their credit, is actually trying to design an ongoing program that would also be an adjunct or more than an adjunct. I mean, a built-in component to their academic learning, too. As I said, science and math and mm-hmm. zoology and whatever else that would be appropriate.
Very well more embedded in the curriculum as opposed to right. you have to provide, you know, X number of community service hours. I think that's right. exactly a good way to describe that.
And these kinds of programs, even if a person doesn't, well, I don't know if I want to go into that or not, it's good to explore many different careers this way and to apply their knowledge in a real-world context, the academic yeah. knowledge in a real-world context. Nothing is better than seeing that application and making it happen in the real world. A lot of people think maybe science and math, oh, it's all theory. I don't have any need for this. I heard a fellow talking on the Craig Folley show on WDET this morning. They're doing sort of an end of year summary of stories.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I don't need math. Math is not important. I don't have to study that. I got my calculator, or I got my But then he lost his phone or something, or left his calculator somewhere, and the. Well, I don't know how to do paper and pencil, Craig Folley said. Well, I don't know how to do that. That was back when I was in school, because you never thought it was important. You never integrated that studies in your life early on to see how, you know, science and math is really important every day in your life, so that you're not a victim and you can fend for yourself when needed, or in this case, continue a relationship, a compassionate relationship with the rest of the world. I'm not sure my granddaughter, who's only 3, really is thinking about how to be compassionate, how to be kind to anything in the rest of the world yet. She's still 3, you know, not
right.
She's in school, but, you know, it's just daycare, good daycare. It's a University of Michigan program that they do. They have a facility next to Fordson High School. right now. So she goes a couple days a week, and that's a very directed, good program. We're considering maybe Montessori or something that's also got an intense philosophy when she gets a little bit older. But these kinds of outreaches, it's important for parents to try to make those possible, whether it's with the advanced technology charter school. And I wasn't, I didn't know that they jumped all the way back to kindergarten. Well, it says rigorous pre-K to 12, so yes. Even before kindergarten they have programs. If you want more information, we're not plugging them, although they are a nonprofit, and we're just mentioning they're available along with many other charter opportunities in Dearborn. Their website is confusing, but it's www.ataFordPass.com. Which stands for something that I'm not sure. Partnership for Advanced Studies. There you go. Okay. Long website address. But you could probably just the Advanced Technology Academy. It'll probably pop up as one of your top choices if you just Google that in. But it's ataFordPass.org. And, of course, the Dearborn Animal Shelter is DearbornAnimals.org. You mentioned it early, and I always try to conclude with it. You could use more space as well as more volunteers and equipment and food and just cash donations, too, to keep this wonderful volunteer-based nonprofit succeeding at the level that it has so far, but always on the edge. Well, actually, two questions here. The first question is, of course, how crossed do our fingers have to be for the beginning of a new facility or a campaign for it? I haven't noticed an announcement of an official fundraising direction here. Do we still have the land from the city of Dearborn? Is that still viable, or are you still looking for maybe something better than that?
There are still various options in consideration, and they're always trying to define what is the right fit that will not actually harm the shelter's ability to function as an organization. Because if we get into a building that is too costly to operate, it could actually potentially be harmful to the organization instead of being helpful to the organization. So that's a very important balance to look at. Maybe today you can get into a building that's twice the size that you actually need, but if you can't operate that building and pay to maintain it in the years moving forward, that's actually going to be debilitating
to the organization.
The term
used to be house poor. Somebody would buy a home too expensive for their budget, actually.
And we're already dealing with homeless animals, so we can't be double homeless. It just doesn't make any sense, right? Okay. So it's important that
the
shelter...
You've got to be able to pay the mortgage, right?
Exactly, that the shelter is locating in a facility that's appropriate to itself and also then more adaptable to the ways that we need to be caring for animals as opposed to the facility that we're in now, which is very stressed by the number of animals that we're caring for.
Do you have room for more trailers?
No, actually the problem is the property that we're sitting on really can't accommodate more trailers either.
The temporary shelter trailers is not...
It doesn't really help to mm-hmm. build on. We can't stack them very well. They're not good at that, so that's not going to fly. But we really do need a new facility, and we're hopeful that some way we'll be able to have something move forward in 2011. There are a lot of people putting energy into getting this to occur.
When times were better, maybe 5 years ago or something, we were probably hoping for a large startup grant from like an auto company or something.
and that was very helpful. Us, like a lot of other nonprofit organizations, had seen that potential 5 years ago, and the bottom fell out, and truthfully. Yeah. So we had to be more practical in the approach. And today we're, just packed to the gills with animals. It remains a very challenging time for people economically, and we do continue to see animals being surrendered or dumped that normally would not have been in those circumstances. So the shelter is incurring a lot of animals in the numbers of like 20% increase over year to year. We had 30% more puppies and kittens in the past month than we have ever had in the care of the shelter. And
it
just continues to rain animals because
someone
doesn't afford to have their pet sterilized. This means you end up with unwanted litters. And unfortunately, there are more and more of those. there was a case that got a fair amount of news attention, that we had these pups that we kind of called them the Balfour pups, because the very kind folks at Balfour, who go into circumstances where homes are needing to be boarded up or cared for from hazardous situations, found 8 puppies in a home, and they were very malnourished, and we have all but one of them placed now. But we still have puppies in our care. There's about a dozen of them. Same with kittens, and we continue to have animals brought in on a daily basis that need to be find new homes.
So, sorry to interrupt, but I would imagine, like so many people, like myself, I'm actually we're in the process of looking for a dog. We usually go to the Doberman Rescue sites, and they usually show pictures. But it sounds like there's no way to keep up on the website. Maybe
we
even
do our
the
best.
Doberman.
Yes, yeah. It's a great question, Amy. Most of the time, the animals are photographed and put up on pet art on our site through a Pet Finder server that we are able to get them as quickly as we can. But they can't all be photographed right away. We have to hold them for 5 days before they can even go up on the site. So it's best to even stop into the shelter, give us a call if you're looking for an animal. We can put you on a wish list for a Doberman, for example, if one comes in, because we do see purebred dogs. There's no question about that.
Right. And you communicate regularly with the various rescue
absolutely
operations. Who do specialty rescues too, like either a certain breed of dog. I don't know if there's specialty rescue people for just certain kinds of cats, but other kinds of pets too. If people are looking for something other than a dog and a cat, there's various rescue operations that you're aware of. Just people who are volunteering in their own homes to try to specialize and give temporary shelter.
Sure, they do.
We're
grateful for help at this time of year. We're sitting in what is evidently the epicenter of the giving time, as 12:31. How funny is that, Jay? But you mentioned that literally, I've been told that the hours between 1 and 4 o'clock today are the biggest giving time of the entire year, because people are scrambling right before they're going to go out and party, I hope, for New Year's Eve, and also trying to make sure they get in that tax deduction. So that is an important giving time as we sit here in the studio.
I assume people are going to be on at the shelter today. I think on Fridays, until 4 o'clock, or how long are they open today?
I don't know if we're closing at all early today. I just spoke with the shelter manager a short while ago, and they were packed. There were people coming in with donations, and we're grateful.
Great.
A day off means that sometimes someone has time to come in. Yeah.
I just know you have typically longer hours on a Tuesday and a Thursday.
Yes, we do.
Are you going to be open tomorrow, Saturday at all?
No,
because it is New Year's Day.
It will be closed on New Year's Day. Of course, people will be in to care for the animals, but we will not be open to the public.
On the website, they could make a financial donation through dearbornanimals.org,
yes,
of course.
Yes, you can.
And there they could also set up, I think this is the first or maybe the second year, of set up maybe a monthly donation.
Yes.
So if you don't have a lot of money to give, but each month you think you could budget even $10 or $25, I mean, I've opted for a monthly donation plan so that each year it adds up to more for you folks, and the need is there. And you can count on it coming each month, even though, well, minus to a charge cards, you're losing 3% on that, but or whatever the service fee is, you have to pay as a nonprofit. But that's possible to do right now through dearbornanimals.org.
Yes, it is. Right. The recurring donations are of great help, as you've pointed out, because then there's some monies that the shelter knows they can count on coming in each month, and that's very helpful.
Well, that would be, consider adopting an animal. That's first priority.
Please.
Number two, any sort of support they can give to this very, very worthy nonprofit operated by volunteers from the Dearborn area here. We're talking about the Dearborn Animal Shelter, operated by the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter. Are there some special events that might get people's attention out and about in the community in January that you might want to mention finally?
Well, there are some things that are always going on. We always do fun training classes and that sort of thing that are on the website, and we'll have some events posted in January and third-party events that pop up all the time. But our first major event going on is actually in February. It's our Cool Cat Casino Night for all of us cool cats. It's a fun opportunity for Texas Hold'em and poker, and it is a really well-attended event. February 20th is the date, and it's at the Father Patrick O'Kelly KFC Hall over in West Dearborn on Park, and it is a really fun evening. And tickets will be available shortly on the website. And, boy, if you want to come out and have a rootin' tootin' good time, the Cool Cat Casino Night will be a fun one for all of us out there playing. And,
you have to wear a cowboy
course,
hat.
Fundraising. You know what? People come dressed like you wouldn't believe in cowboy hats and everything else. So it is a lot of fun. People like to get together and play and enjoy themselves, and then the money's doing good at the same time. So
if you need an excuse, folks, these are very entertaining events. They have all kinds of events every year that they organize and work hard on getting your attention and getting people involved in many different ways. I mean, I know you have golf outings at least once, if not several times, some black tie events at the
Nobie's
Dearborn
Feast,
Inn.
Vegetarian dinner.
Right.
Lots of great opportunities for people to engage. And they don't have to be long commitments. They can be just come on out and check it out, or it can be something that you spend an entire day doing.
Well, we just want to thank you so much for coming on our last show of 2010. Maybe people will keep you top of their mind when considering either a pet adoption or at least a nonprofit donation for 2011. And keep us informed here on the Journal about things as they come up. I know we're on your email list, but we always invite you back if there's an issue you want to get our special attention for, which is it's just ongoing over there. Many nonprofits have this issue, have their issues all times of year, but right now is a crucial time for you. So, Sandy Bolton, thank you very much for coming by the Journal today.
Thank you for having me here today, Jay.
And thank you also, Amy, who we didn't allow to talk from the Friends, for coming by to see what's happening.
Amy Squared.
Amy Powers, WHR News Director, and myself will be back after these comments from
Jim Hightower.
Jim Hightower, that's right, as we always offer here. So it's our nationally syndicated progressive, giving you some ideas about how the other folks are doing at the end of the year. That's right, the well-to-do, the rich people. Here's some comments from him, and we'll be back with more Journal wrap-up for 2010 on the station, Making Waves.
The signature phrase of America's booming good food movement has been expanded from organic to local and sustainable. Good. That phrase suggests great quality, strong environmental stewardship, and a commitment to keeping our food dollars in the local economy. If you support the local economy's movement as I do, no doubt you will be thrilled to hear that a new local food store is coming soon to your neighborhood. In fact, it's even named Neighborhood Market. Only, it's not. It's a Walmart. Yes, the $400 billion a year retail behemoth with 2 million employees laboring in 8,500 stores spread around the globe now is putting on a local mask. The giant is promising to buy 9% of the produce it'll sell from local farmers. Big whoopee! This means that 91% of the foodstuffs offered in its neighborhood chain will come from way away land. But even the 9% number is a deceit. For Walmart says that it defines local as grown in the same state. Excuse me, but in California, Florida, Texas, and other such sizable states, that can be a mighty long truck haul away. Not exactly what us locals would call local. As for being sustainable, Walmart is bragging about a $1 billion investment it'll make to shrink its environmental footprint a bit. That's a nice gesture, but come on. This outfit has humongous feet that bestride the whole world, and even $1 billion won't shrink that footprint. Also, it's made no commitment to organic production, nor did it rule out peddling genetically engineered Frankenfoods as part of its sustainability gimmick. This is Jim Hightower saying, who does Walmart think it's fooling? It's not coming to our neighborhoods to be local and sustainable, but to drive out our homegrown enterprises and extract profits from our own communities.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Wasn't it great in the holiday season to enjoy friends, family, good meals, and of course, being radiated or groped at the airport security line? Authorities have spent billions of our tax dollars on airport technology and agents supposedly to catch terrorists. But the system amounts to a governmental intrusion that is based on a fundamentally un-American presumption. You are guilty until proven innocent. The founders, who faced the terrorists of their day, would upchuck at our leaders' willingness to so meekly sacrifice the basic right of a presumption of innocence. And how do you prove you are not a fiendish terrorist hell-bent on destroying America? By meekly surrendering the very freedoms that the authorities say actual terrorists want to take from us. First, remove your shoes, a mass bowing down gesture that must cause terrorists to giggle with fervent delight. Now, though, we must also submit either to being groped or to having a radiation scan that lets agents peek beneath your skivvies. The scan, appropriately enough, requires you to raise both hands in the surrender position. The authoritarians and their apologists bark that liberty is a privilege that must be sacrificed for security. As one writer of a letter to the editor put it, I say scan away and grope away, if that makes flying safer. Well, sir, that turns out to be a mighty big if. The chief flaw in our present technology-based security scheme is that it doesn't do any good. Hundreds of millions of passengers have been searched, and the system has yet to catch even one terrorist. In fact, the few would-be terrorists who've even attempted an airplane assault were hapless nincompoops who were not deterred by our vast security system, but were brought down by their own incompetence or by alert passengers. This is Jim Hightower saying, how long will Lady Liberty be forced to bow down to autocratic government rules that aren't working?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
And you can find out more about him right there at that website. That little tag is not promoting Jim's book anymore, which is just for more information. It's not commercial there, folks. But he does have a website, hightowerlowdown.org. And you can find a whole realm of Jim's opinions and find links to other sources for information. We always say here on the Journal, don't believe what you hear on this show, unlike other radio and TV hosts, for its own sake. Use it as a jumping-off place to do a little research. The number one mark of an educated person is never take anything on face value. You've got to read and study and learn more, and radio and TV can't give you enough depth, I think, to make a good decision on your own. And you should try to make a lot of decisions on your own. Don't trust the radio and TV media for their own sake. Use it as a jumping-off place. Hope you know that's true. Tell your friends. Discuss things. Tell them websites and books to read. I love books. And for in-depth knowledge, there's nothing better than a book. And not necessarily a Kindle. I've tried iBooks and Kindle books in the last year or so. Amy Powers here with me. Have you tried any reading books on your iPod Touch or Kindle or anything like that?
No, I haven't. I really do like having a book in hand, being able to, of course, you can carry a Kindle around too, but it is like sitting at a computer to read a book. That to me isn't particularly enjoyable.
Yeah, it doesn't allow me the sort of time, and I'm not sure why. It's because, again, I'm very old, and I've gone through years of reading maybe tens of thousands of books, so I'm used to that experience. Mm-hmm. It's what you're used to. But I know that I can get deeply involved with a print version of a book that I can't get as involved. I can't be thinking as I'm reading because there's, I don't know, my batteries are powering down or something, or I'm concerned about the small type or the print. I've always read books, it's a habit from college too, and done annotations as I'm reading them. To emphasize things. I'm always thinking about the important stuff, and I have a pen or a pencil in my hand to underline and even make comments to myself. Now, that's valuable for many students who have to read a book, a textbook or something, because it's easier to study your own highlighting or raise questions in class with the professor if you've already written that question down on the margin of the book that that they're discussing in class. But it's a way to focus my thoughts. Now, it takes a little bit more time, and it does mark up the book. I gave copies of books from my library that I've read and didn't mark up to people like Amy and other people on the WHFR staff here for Christmas presents, because I love getting that book gift concept across and to keep hardbound books alive for the sake of the of the experience and the fact that it does cause you, I believe, to get more deeply involved with the ideas if you're reading a hardbound book.
It is a different physical experience, you know, having a book versus,
sitting up
sort of straight and reading it off of a screen, you know, whether it's a the Kindle or, you know, you pulled something up and downloaded to your computer. It is different, and it's just not my first choice.
Unlike most of these electronic devices, which are good for a few minutes at a time, sitting down and reading either a magazine, a good magazine, or a book for an hour or two in a row, that's an in-depth experience. You're thinking, you're creating ideas in your head, you're responding to them either in your head or as I do on the margin of the book itself. That's real learning. That's active use of your brain in a logical way, usually, and you're getting ideas established that don't come any other way. They don't come on TV. I watch TV news for 3 hours in a row. Yeah, but it's little bits and pieces. They're always hitting you with pictures and move on to the next story in 30 seconds. I guess the only thing that I could an electronic experience of knowledge that I could recommend at the end of the year here on the show is maybe watching a feature-length documentary, a non-fiction documentary, of course, by definition, but some people don't understand that, on a topic like Food Incorporated, one of my favorite documentaries I saw this year. What's the one called? The Lagoon, Japanese fishing practices, unfair fishing practices with dolphins and whales and so on. I'm just getting a copy of it. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard about it. It's won awards as best documentary of the year. And there's so many more out there, even from the past. Michael Moore's documentaries, the last one being Sicko, which, second from last after is Capitalism, A Love Affair, which is very good too. But Sicko about our healthcare situation, which is still not resolved or fixed in this country, even with the real improvements that have come with Medicare and what's sometimes negatively called Obamacare in our Medicare system. I'll let you know, I'm turning 65 in a couple of days here. I know, Amy, I don't look 65.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, people just keep thinking I look like I'm 20 or 30. Okay, thank you. Because on radio, don't really know. But I'll let you know. So far, Social Security, which I started when I was 62, and the Medicare process has been so easy, mostly online, knowledgeable people available by phone. How many business can say that? And just as a counterpoint, I mean, yeah, I like many other libertarians and Tea Partiers of one ilk or another, you know, you toss out that general, big government can never do anything good for you. That's just not true. There are many wonderful examples of local, state, and federal government programs such as, I gotta say, Social Security and Medicare that have worked out really well. Although many times big government, even big bureaucracy, let's turn around as Jim Hightower would do, big corporate interests that don't do good things for a lot of people all the time or any of the time in some cases. So I think it all depends on what you're talking about and how you're talking about it. But I'll give my blow-by-blow report throughout the year about my first year of Medicare and see how that goes. At this point, seamless transition from the policy, the Michigan Blue Cross Blue Shield policy that I had before. By the way, they're under indictment by the U.S. Attorney General, Michigan.
As an aside.
Blues, yes, for all kinds of unfair practices that they've been doing. They're a nonprofit, but they don't act that way in terms of their top priorities for being nice to people. But nonetheless, that particular policy
we just got our huge rate increase.
Oh, yes. And it's going up for my... it's called an Advantage Plan, a Medicare Advantage Plan now that I'm 65 that will... you know, I'll be paying money to the federal government and therefore much less to Blue Care Blue Shield. But in total, because of the raises, too, of Blue Care Network in Michigan, I'll be paying more next year as an example, because Medicare is not free. You mm-hmm. do have to pay monthly payments, although there is some subsidizing there. So the money I paid myself for this plan is now going to the federal government, but I still got to pay more in the long run. Again, hope, wish, New Year's resolution, New Year's dream for the future, universal single-payer health care like they have in many wonderful countries of the world like Canada and France and Germany, and they all have in England, and they all have their own varieties of that. But imagine, people, as John Lennon might say if he was still alive, imagine if you're sick going to a doctor of choice, as they have in all these other countries, having to pay nothing up front, no deductible, getting your prescriptions as needed for free anywhere you want to go to pick them up. Yes, you pay more in taxes, and so does everybody in Canada, France, and Germany, and so on, for health care systems and other things that are better than what we have in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And there's no hassle. People say, oh, well, the new Obamacare, if people understood it, whether it's Andy Griffith on those 30-second spots on running on TV now, those public service announcements or others, if people could look at the details, they're going to be a lot better off. So thank you, Democrats, and thank you, Republicans. But it's so confusing. Even this week, as I mentioned to Amy, in the Press and Guide edition on this Wednesday, 2 days ago, the 29th of December, they have a nice overview of how to make Medicare prescription, that's called Part D, drug choices for those people that are into that, either Medicare people or earlier if you want to get involved. You have to make these choices yourself, and then you have to pay money up front. You have to compare this myriad of private profit health care plans for the one that might be best for you. And there's ways to do it. Even the government website has some ways through their websites for you to try to compare in your own state.
Is this the donut, that 20% they say?
No, that's something else.
Okay.
That's between Part A and Part B, and what you qualify, and the donut is going to get smaller over the next couple of years unless the Republicans do away with all these changes, which are for the better. But the problem is they're not simple, and they cost you extra money out of pocket. Universal, single-payer health care, Ralph Nader, Jim Hightower, Michael Moore, all the other people I know and respect who have been dealing, Howard Dean even, of the Democratic Party chairman in past years, they know how much simpler and easier for everybody and how it would reduce costs for all of us and give us, probably, if we did it right, the right kind of health. I mean, that's what we need. In a way, I'm sorry, at the end of the year here, I hope the Republicans do away with Obamacare, but they will never start over, unfortunately, with universal single payer, which seems, progressive or, socialism, which is what it's going to take, as proven by many countries elsewhere in the world, to get better care for lower cost than what we have now. And still keep the choices there. Nobody's saying what doctor you got to go to in Canada or France, okay? Yes, there's questions about level of quality coverage on this kind of problem or that, yes. And every system, even Canada, has got bad aspects. But if we're starting over, we could take the best of the socialized systems from Canada and France and so on. Blah, 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 blah. Okay.
And keep it under 2,700 pages.
That's right. Yeah. I was reading in the New York Times that Obama, this is just from... it's from December 10th in the Times. Obama is considering broad overhaul for income tax. Well, he's got all these Tea Partiers and teabaggers and Republicans, many of whom actually campaigned on the fair tax, which we've had many people on the show, and I've sort of pushed on Amy and Dennis here on my staff to consider and to think about. And even gave a copy of Michigan Fair Tax Plan to George DeRaney, our new 15th District Michigan rep here. If the Republicans are, some of them, already leaning toward that, and Obama wants a way, with all those Republicans in the new Senate and House of Representatives there, why doesn't he consider the Fair Tax Plan, which is, in fact, a graduated tax plan, which is also progressive And a great idea. I'm just saying. If he's looking for ways to build bridges here, but he wants to get rid of thousands of pages of inappropriate deductions and loopholes and so on in the income tax system, which is coming up by April 15th, the next couple of months. We all got to hassle that. Let's consider a wild, crazy, sweeping change, which even Mike Huckabee is in favor of, but also a bunch of progressives, like myself, I'd like to believe. And so I'm just saying, there's ideas there. It's risky.
You don't see that come up too often.
Well, mentioned. Democrats wouldn't do it because it seems to be something only Republicans would say. But in fact, it's a major change, which is always scary, even to Republicans, which could do really good things and is right in line with a lot of libertarian anti-partier type ideas.
Sort of philosophy,
and
absolutely.
Yet even Jim Hightower and Dennis Kucinich and the guy from Wisconsin, which lost his progressive Democrat from Wisconsin, which he got voted out.
Okay.
But they're all for it. So got to be something good when people on both
and
far
Hoekstra
sides
was for it.
That's
as
right,
well,
Pete Hoekstra here in Michigan, running as governor, which didn't get attention, and the guy that lost to another representative to the House
in Michigan,
Gary Powers, won as a Democrat.
No relation.
His opposition. It was a Polish name. Yeah, he was in favor of fair tax too.
Oh, okay.
Although he did a lot of unfair he had a lot of unfair campaigning against him because.
Oh wait, out in Oakland County,
yeah,
Rocky Rakowski.
Rakowski,
yes,
yeah, he was for fair tax, although unjustly pillared.
Yeah.
Oh, he wants a big tax increase. Yeah, but he do away with all the
other
withholding.
Yeah, it was picking and choosing what aspects to address.
Let me just say to people, you can go to fairtax.org for the national view of this if you want to learn more, if you haven't heard our shows before. Fairtax.org or MIFairTax.org for the Michigan version to replace Michigan income tax. It's basically revenue, that is the money you have to pay folks, neutral.
Yeah.
So you won't be paying more in tax. You won't be paying less
consumption tax
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it does switch from the various calculations to a consumption tax, to a sales tax, if you will. But you don't have to pay any withholding anymore for those people who are employed. You don't have to file any more income tax returns. And if you just read the whole story, and this battle has been going for years, it's radical. It's big.
It's time.
But it's time for something like that that might work. And when you get...
At least to openly discuss it across the lines as to, hey, is this feasible?
When you get progressives and you get Tea Partiers and libertarians on the left and the right agreeing, then maybe it's time for middle-of-the-road Democrats and Republicans to sit up and take notice because it might be a point of compromise. Yeah. Imagine if you're in the middle and there's a great idea on the left, which is the same thing as a great idea on the right, maybe it deserves to move into the mainstream. I'm just saying it's worthy of discussion, even though it's a big deal. But if Obama wants to make a change in income tax and get rid of a lot of nasty deductions, loopholes, exemptions, things that don't make sense, things that might be good for the middle class, as it says at the bottom of the Times article, well, maybe there are some ways
to
do it. Yeah. I was...
You were thinking about political... sort of top political candidates this year, but we're coming up on the 2 o'clock hour.
The most fun that Amy and I and Dennis had, I think, was when we had Virg Bonaro on here.
It was fun. He was
scary.
Dynamic.
He lost as governor, but it was very dynamic. He was driven, we could tell.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else drove him here.
Somebody else drove
him. No. I mean, he really had that tremendous passion, as did Snyder, but for the sake of television, he was a little cooler. That's always a problem with TV. If you're too passionate, you look crazy, asked Howard Dean.
That's just who I was thinking of.
Can't even yelp out loud with excitement, and he looks like a crazy person on television.
Rick Schneider definitely had that focused control and controlled the people that could talk to him and interview him
and he had that great image which he helped perpetuate as an outsider, even a Republican outsider. So we wish him well. Good luck. luck. Mm-hmm. You got it, Rick.
You got it.
The bad news is, and we're going to, it's 2 o'clock, it's time to end, and Highway 61 to get started with Lynn sitting in today. And she's right here in the studio staring heavily at me. But we know the podcast doesn't cut off for another minute. So we're
she wasn't staring.
We're still being recorded for the show. Tell your friends at WHFR.FM, the journal button. Click on it, listen anytime. And I'm now starting to put our guest names.
Great.
They don't appear immediately, but if you click on the podcast for the journal and you click on each date for the last 6 months,
tremendous.
The detail will pop up about who was on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can get it on the homepage even, but if not, it is buried there a little now. I said a bad, I hate to end on a negative.